Chapter 16. At this hour, the observatory was practically deserted. No one was there but Pharaoh and Thalanda. To Binet's relief, Athor 77 was nowhere to be seen. Good, Binet thought. The old man was exhausted enough from the effort he had devoted to working out the Calgash 2 concept. He didn't need more stress loaded upon him this evening. And it would be just fine, having only Pharaoh and Thalanda here. Pharaoh had exactly the kind of quick, untrammeled mind that Binet needed right now. And Thalanda, who had spent so many years scanning the empty spaces of the heavens with her telescope and camera, might be able to fill in some of the conceptual material Binet would require. Thalanda said at once, "I've been developing plates all day, Binet, but it's no go. I'd stake my life on it. There's nothing up there in the sky except the six suns. You don't think the great man's finally gone around the bend, do you?" "I think his mind is as sharp as ever."
"But these photos," Thalanda said.
"I've been running a random scan of every quadrant of the universe for days now. The program's all-inclusive. Snap, move down a couple of degrees. Snap, move, snap. Methodically sweeping the entire sky. And look at what I'm getting, Binet. A bunch of pictures of nothing at all." "If the unknown satellite is invisible, Thalanda, then it can't be seen. It's as simple as that."
"Invisible to the naked eye, maybe. But the camera ought to be able to."
"Listen, never mind that now. I need some help from you two. Purely theoretical stuff. Related to Athor's new theory."
"But if the unknown satellite's nothing but pie in the sky," Thalanda protested.
"Invisible pie might still be real pie," Binet snapped. "And we won't like it when it comes hurtling out of nowhere and hits us in the face. Will you help me or won't you?"
"Well..."
"Good. What I want you to do is prepare computer projections of the movements of all six suns, covering a period of 4,200 years. Thalanda gaped incredulously.
4,200? Is that what you said, Binet?
I know that you don't remotely have records of stellar movements over any such span, but I said computer projections, Thalanda. You've got at least 100 years of reliable records, right?"
"More than that."
"Even better. Set them up and project them backward and forward in time. Have the computer tell you what every daily combination of the six suns was for the last 21 centuries, and for the 21 centuries to come. If you can't do it, I'm sure Pharaoh will be glad to help you write the program."
"I think I can manage it," said Thalanda, in a glacial tone. "And would you mind telling me what this is all about? Are we going into the almanac business now? Even the almanac is content to settle for just the next few years of solar data. So what are you up to?"
"I'll tell you later," Binet said. "That's a promise." He left her fuming at her desk and walked across the observatory to Athor's work area, where he took a seat in front of the three computer screens on which Athor had calculated the Calgash 2 theory. For a long moment, Binet stared thoughtfully at the center screen, showing the orbit of Calgash as perturbed by the hypothetical Calgash 2. Then he touched a key, and the proposed orbital line of Calgash 2 became visible in bright green, a huge eccentric ellipse splayed out across Calgash's own more compact and nearly circular orbit. He studied it for a while. Then he hit the keys that would bring the suns onto the screen, and peered broodingly at them for perhaps an hour, summoning them in all their varying configurations. Now Onos in the sky with Tano and Citha, Onos with Trey and Petru, Onos and Dovum with Trey and Petru, Dovum with Trey and Petru, Dovum with Tano and Citha, Petru and Trey alone. The normal patterns, yes. But what about abnormal patterns? Tano and Citha alone? No, it couldn't happen. The relationship of that double sun system's position in the heavens to the location of the closer suns was such that Tano and Citha could never appear in the sky in this hemisphere unless either Onos or Dovum, or both of them, were visible at the same time. Maybe it had been possible hundreds or thousands of years ago, he thought, though he doubted it. But certainly not now. Trey and Petru and Tano and Citha? Another no. The two sets of double suns were on opposite sides of Calgash. Whenever one pair was in the sky, the other one generally was hidden by the planet's own bulk. Now and then, the four of them did manage to get together in the sky, but Onos always was visible when such two-pair conjunctions occurred. Those were the famous five-sun days, which produced the equally distinctive Dovum-only days in the opposite hemisphere. They happened only every few years. Trey without Petru? Tano without Citha? Well, technically, yes.
When one of the double sun pairs was close to the horizon, one sun would be above the horizon and one of them below it for a brief period. But that wasn't really a significant solar event, just a momentary aberration. The double suns were still together, but transiently separated by the line of the horizon. All six suns in the sky at once? Impossible. Worse than that, unthinkable. Yet he had just thought it. Binet shivered at the idea. If all six of them were above the horizon simultaneously, then there would have to be a region in the other hemisphere where no sunlight whatever could be seen. Darkness, darkness. But darkness was unknown everywhere on Calgash except as an abstract concept. There could never have been a time when the six suns moved together and a major part of the world was plunged into utter lightlessness. Could there have been? Could there? Binet pondered the chilling possibility. Once more he heard Theremin's deep voice explaining the theories of the apostles to him. The suns will all disappear. The stars will shoot flame down out of a black sky. He shook his head. Everything he knew about the movements of the suns in the heavens rebelled against the idea of the six of them somehow bunching up on one side of Calgash at the same time. It just couldn't happen, short of a miracle. Binet didn't believe in miracles. The way the suns were arranged in the sky, there always had to be at least one or two of them shining over every part of Calgash at any given moment. Forget the six suns here, darkness there hypothesis. What was left? Dovum alone, he thought. The little red sun, all alone in the sky? Well, yes, it did happen, though not often. On those occasional five sun days when Tanno, Citha, Trey, Patru, and Onos all were in conjunction in the same hemisphere, that left only Dovum for the other side of the world. Binet wondered whether that might be the moment when the darkness came. Could it be? Dovum by itself might cast so little light, just its cool and feeble reddish-purple gleam, that people might mistake it for darkness. But that didn't really make sense. Even little Dovum should be able to provide enough light to keep people from plunging into terror. Besides, Dovum-only days occurred somewhere in the world every few years. They were uncommon, but not all that extraordinary. Surely, if the effects of seeing nothing but a single small dim sun in the sky could cause vast psychological upheavals, then everybody would be worrying about the next Dovum-only event, which was due, as Binet recalled, in just another year or so. And, in fact, nobody was thinking about it at all. But if Dovum alone were in the sky, and something happened, some special thing, some truly uncommon thing to blot out what little light it provided. Philanda appeared at his shoulder and said sourly, "All right, Binet, I've got your solar projections all set up. Not just 4,200 years, either, but an infinite regression. Pharaoh gave me a suggestion for the math, and we've done the program so that it'll run clear to the end of time, if you want it to, or backward to the beginning of the universe." "Fine. Pipe it over to the computer I'm using, will you? And will you come here, Pharaoh?" The pudgy little graduate student ambled over. His dark eyes were agleam with curiosity. Obviously, he was bubbling with questions about what Binet was doing. But he observed student-professor protocol and said nothing, merely waited to hear what Binet would tell him. "What I've got here on my screen," Binet began, "is Aethor's suggested orbit for the hypothetical Calgash 2. I'm going to assume that the orbit's a correct one, since Aethor has told us that it accurately accounts for all the perturbations in our own orbit, and I have faith that Aethor knows what he's doing. I also have here, or at any rate I will when Thalanda has finished the data transfer, the program that you and she have just worked out for solar movements over a long span of time. What I'm going to do now is to attempt to work out a correlation between the presence of just one sun in the sky and the close approach of Calgash 2 to this planet so that you can calculate the frequency of eclipses," Pharaoh blurted. "Is that it, sir?" The boy's quickness was amusing and also a little disconcerting. "As a matter of fact, it is. You have eclipses on your mind, too, do you?" "I was thinking about them when Aethor told us all about Calgash 2 the first time. Simbron, you remember, mentioned that the strange satellite might hide the light of some of the suns for a little while, and you said that that would be called an eclipse. And then I started to work out some of the possibilities. But Aethor cut me off before I could say anything because he was tired and wanted to go home." "And you haven't said anything about it since?" "No one's asked me," Pharaoh said. "Well, here's your moment. I'm going to transfer everything that's on my computer to yours, and you and I are going to sit down in this room separately and begin pushing the numbers around. What I'm searching for is a very special case in which Kalgash 2 is at its closest point of approach to Kalgash, and there's only one sun in the sky. Pharaoh nodded. He headed for his computer at a speed faster than Bine had ever seen him move before. Bine didn't expect to be the first to finish the computation. Pharaoh was notoriously quick at such things. But the point was to have each of them work on the problem independently, to provide separate validation of the result. So when Pharaoh made a snorting sound of triumph after a little while and jumped up to say something, Bine irritably waved at him to be silent and went on working. It took him 10 embarrassing eternal minutes more. Then the numbers began coming up on his screen. If every assumption that he had fed into the computer was correct, Athor's calculation of the unknown satellite's probable mass and orbit, the Landa's calculation of the movements of the six suns in the heavens, then it wasn't very likely that darkness was going to come. The only possibility that would bring total darkness was a Dovum-only day. But it didn't look as if Kalgash 2 stood much chance of eclipsing Dovum. Dovum-only days were such rarities that the likelihood of Dovum's being alone in the sky at the time when Kalgash 2 was anywhere near Kalgash in its long orbit was infinitesimal, Bine knew. Or were they? No, not infinitesimal. Not at all. He took a careful look at the figures on the screen. There seemed to be a slim possibility of a convergence. The calculation wasn't complete, but things were heading in that direction as the computer worked over each Kalgash-Kalgash-2 conjunction in the 4,200-year period of the inquiry. Every time Kalgash-2 came round on its orbit, it reached Kalgash's vicinity closer and closer to a Dovum-only day. The numbers continued to appear as the computer processed all the astronomical possibilities. Bine watched in mounting awe and disbelief. There it was, finally. All three bodies lined up in just the right way. Kalgash, Kalgash 2, Dovum. Yes, it was possible for Kalgash 2 to cause a total eclipse of Dovum when Dovum was the only sun visible in the sky. But that configuration was an extreme rarity. Dovum had to be alone in its hemisphere and at maximum distance from Kalgash, while Kalgash 2 had to be at its minimum distance. Kalgash 2's apparent diameter would then be 7 times that of Dovum. That was sufficient to hide Dovum's light for well over half a day, so that no spot on the planet would escape the effects of darkness. The computer showed that such a highly special circumstance was capable of occurring only once every... Bine gasped. He didn't want to believe it. He turned to Pharaoh. The young graduate student's round face was pale with shock. Huskily, Bine said, "All right. I'm done, and I've got a number. But first you tell me yours. Eclipse of Dovum by Kalgash 2, periodicity of 2,049 years. Yes, Bine said leadenly. My number exactly. Once every 2,049 years. He felt dizzy. The entire universe seemed to be reeling around him. Once every 2,049 years. The exact length of a year of godliness, according to the Apostles of Flame. The very same figure that was given in the Book of Revelations. The suns will all disappear. The stars will shoot flame down out of a black sky. He didn't know what stars were, but Sephira had discovered a hill on the Sagakan Peninsula where cities had been destroyed by flame with astonishing regularity, approximately every 2,000 years. When she had had a chance to run exact carbon-14 tests, would the precise figure of the time between each conflagration on the Hill of Thombo turn out to be 2,049 years? A black sky. Bine stared helplessly across the room at Pharaoh. When's the next Dovum-only day due to occur? He asked. In 11 months and 4 days, Pharaoh said grimly. On the 19th of Theptar. Yes, Bine said. The same day when Mondior 71 tells us. The sky is going to turn black, and the fire of the gods is going to descend and destroy our civilization.